All right, welcome back to Teaching Tuesdays. This is the second episode that deals with the play that we're talking about, The Crucible by Arthur Miller. Last week I did a little background information about the Salem Witch Trials and a little question that I posed for you guys to think about concerning the Salem Witch Trials, and if you were put in that situation, what would you do? So today I'm just going to talk about Act 1 of the play and ask and answer the questions that I would typically ask in the classroom about each act. Now my answers might not be exact and might not have all the information, but it's going to have a majority of it, so just bear with me and enjoy the time. Hopefully you guys have been either watching the movie and or a performance of the play, or at least reading the play itself. So if you haven't at least watched the first, got taken care of the first part of the play, some of this might not make sense. But I highly, highly, highly recommend, if not require, you guys to have that reading, watching, whatever it is that you're doing, done before you continue to listen to this episode. If not, it's going to be a lot of backtracking to get that done. So either stop it now or continue listening, make sure that you have some notebook paper or whatever with you, something to write with, your computer open with a document, so that way you can take notes if you want to. So let's continue on and answer some questions I have about Act 1 of Arthur Miller's The Crucible. Alright, so question number one that I always ask for Act 1 is for the kids to write down who are the main characters of the play that they've met so far, and to explain what they've been doing as it's been represented in Act 1. So tell them, list all the main characters and, make sure they do that. So we have Reverend Samuel Parris. He saw his daughter and other girls naked in the woods with a servant Tituba from Barbados. We first meet him praying over his daughter who is in bed. His daughter is Betty Parris. And as I said, she's in bed sick, having fainted, swooned. Many in the town, especially her father, think of what happened in the woods with Tituba, who is the slave from Barbados that works for the Parris family. She claims that she didn't cast a spell on all the girls who were with her out in the woods, and that she's not a witch. Then we have Abigail Williams. She's the next person we meet. She's the leader of the group of girls who accused me in the town of Salem. She's also the niece of Reverend Parris. We then meet Susanna Walcott. She and Abigail tell Parris that Dr. Griggs says there's nothing that can be done for Betty in her current state. That she's the one who's told... Susanna's the one who's told from Parris what happened in the woods, and Parris tells her that she can't tell anyone what happened, especially Reverend Hale, who's coming, that there's could possibly be an unnatural cause for Betty's illness. Then we meet Anne Putnam and her husband Thomas. They're talking about their daughter Ruth. The other room is that there are about Betty flying over the barn of one of the people in town, that the daughter Ruth is also sick, that could possibly be the same thing that Betty has, all because of what Tituba did and what happened in the woods. Anne also blames Tituba for killing 7 other of her kids in infancy that could possibly go back to that smallpox indication that I said earlier. We then meet the Putnam's servant, Mercy Lewis. She and Abigail talk about Betty and what happened. Betty ends up setting up screaming about stuff. They slap her, saying, "Hey, be quiet." Then we meet Mary Warren, who's the servant of another family called the Proctors. She enters in a panic because the town's all talking about, witchcraft, and that's what's going on. This is when they slap Betty for screaming out. Earlier, when Mercy first came in, they were slapping her, trying to get her to wake up. Betty says that she's going to tell that Abigail drank blood as a way to kill Goody Proctor or Mrs. Proctor. All of the girls are threatened that, you know, when that happens, Abigail threatens all the girls who are there, saying that if they actually say what went on out in the woods with Tituba, that she would make their lives miserable. She used some other language and ways of doing it, but she threatened them nonetheless. We then meet John Proctor. He comes to take Mary home since she is their servant. But Abigail, you know, takes him off to have a private chat with, and talks about the affair that they had 7 months ago. Proctor said that he would rather cut off his hand before he touched her again in any way, shape, or form. And they end up having a little quarrel about whether or not they love each other, and he fends her off firmly, but with some sympathy. During this whole conversation, there can be a hymn being sung. It can be heard. Betty then starts screaming because she hears it. Abigail calls for Reverend Paris to come and see what's going on. We are then introduced to Giles, however you say his name, Corey, Rebecca, nurse, and her husband, Francis. Rebecca has 11. The nurses are older because they have 11 children, 26 grandchildren, and Rebecca claims that Becky's illness is really nothing serious. She's skeptical of this whole witchcraft scare that's started going on. Putnam and Proctor. Putnam suspects Proctor for reasons because he hasn't been to church and suspects that he has something to do with it. But Proctor claims that he hasn't attended because Paris, all that he does is talk about money, not religious things, which is, as a preacher, reverend, that's what he was supposed to do, but all he does is talk about money. And so then they both argue over whether or not Proctor's going to go to hell, and why or why not. We then meet our last person of the play, our main character, Reverend John Hale. He comes to see if there really is any relevance or truth to this whole witchcraft thing. Giles talks to him when he first arrives about who he believes are the witches and who doesn't, and who believes in it and who doesn't. Hale then talks to Abigail about what happened in the forest, and she was kind of mentioned as the ringleader and one of the older girls there. Then also talks with Paris about all that he saw and what happened. And that's when we get the more of that big old story of what went on. And then they all talk to Tituba. That whole situation with her goes on. She's sentenced, but then Hale talks with her about, you know, trying to recant and get her, you know, her life to be saved. So that was the first question that I usually have them answer. That takes quite a while, and they always have to write it down so they know exactly what's been going on. Then I ask them to kind of like an easy curveball, you know, what's the setting of the play, what events have taken place before it even begins. So it takes place, of course, in Salem, Massachusetts in 1692. Tituba is said to have taken the girls out into the woods, and they have some sort of ceremony. During that ceremony, Abigail drinks blood as part of a spell to kill Mrs. Proctor, who is the wife of John Proctor, whom she had an affair with. The girls are discovered by Paris as he's walking through the woods, who had seen Tituba, quote-unquote, waving her arms over the fire, and heard, quote-unquote, a screeching and gibberish coming from her mouth. He said witchcraft was taking place, and he says he saw all the girls naked at one point. Betty then fainted, making everyone think that she was ill or a spell was cast on her. So that's kind of what happened prior to the beginning of the play, when we first see Reverend Hale kneeling next to Betty's bed and she's asleep. Or out of it, or whatever it is that she is. Alright, the third question I ask them is what relationship exists between Reverend Paris and Putnam. And then what relationship exists between Abigail and Proctor to discover, to go through and talk about, exact based on what they talked with about with each other, what kind of relationship is going on. So, the one between Putnam and Paris. Putnam is described as a vindictive and apparently nursing a grudge because his brother-in-law had been passed over for the post of the minister in favor of George Burroughs. Now, Putnam apparently felt that his wealth and prominence in Salem entitled his family to preferential treatment. When they didn't receive it, his resentment continued to grow. And the stage directions in the scene where Anne Putnam is compelled to admit to sending Tituba to conjure the spirits of her dead children, Putnam is described as intent upon getting Paris, for whom he has only contempt, to move towards the abyss. Since Paris is relatively new to Salem, he doesn't have a really long history with Putnam, but he has that weak personality and frequently bends to Putnam's will. Because Paris is largely unsupported in Salem, Putnam sees Paris as a tool he can use to get to turn events in directions that will benefit himself. Putnam aligns himself with Paris not because of respect or for liking him, but because it's politically and personally expedient. I would also say financially, way to get more money for him since he is a very, since he is a very prominent person in the community, just another way to secure himself financially as well. So then the relationship between Abigail and John, as I mentioned before, they were ex-lovers. They had an affair. Abigail was the servant before Mercy at the Proctors, and it was, at least according to her, a very intense affair. It ended 7 months prior to the beginning of the play, and Abigail makes it clear that she wants Proctor back. Proctor, on the other hand, doesn't want to get back together because he loves his wife and wants to remain loyal and prove to her that he does love her in spite of all that he did and his feelings. Alright, so then the next question I ask, question number 4, how does Tituba respond to Hale's accusations of being a witch, and how does she change her mind and why? So, of course, she denies that she is bewitching the female children in town. She insists that there are others in town who have contracted with the devil. After Hale accuses her of witchcraft, he persuades her to follow God and asks who she has seen from town with the devil, since she had brought that up. She starts talking about 4 other people that she's seen that are from Salem that she's seen with the devil. And that she also tells Hale that the devil asks her to kill him, but she refused to do so. He can kill Paris and all that. She was a slave and was threatened with her life being taken from her and or that she would be sent away from Betty, whom she really loved because she had seen the child grow up. She repented and changed her mind so she won't be separated from the child she loves. And, of course, she wanted to keep her life. Alright, question number 5. What does Abigail do to clear her name of witchcraft? How do you think this will affect the people that Abigail accuses? Well, one, Abigail pushes everything she did onto Tituba, claiming that Tituba made her do everything and that she wasn't in control of her actions, even though she really was. Abigail is a very selfish person. She affected everyone in town by being vindictive and selfish. She hashed out old grievances and pitted people against each other. She also threatened the other girls to go along with her plan, which shows just how vindictive she really is and how terrible of a person she is. Alright, so what prayer list that displays the names of innocent individuals that Abigail and her friends accused of witchcraft. Giles Corey was crushed by rocks. Elizabeth Proctor, Rebecca Nurse, George Jacobs, Martha Corey, John Proctor, all of those were hung and they were the ones who were targeted. Okay, so then the last question I ask, how would you describe the tone or mood in the first act? Well, the mood would be very one of fear and suspicion, because as these events start to unfold about the girls in the forest and what they were doing, what was seen, what's kind of going on. Everyone's fearful and suspicious of everyone else. The tone, of course, is one of suspicion and hysteria, because based on the fear and suspicion, everyone lost their minds, because they were actually all wondering, okay, what exactly were those girls doing? Why were they out in the woods doing what they were doing? Is it really witchcraft, or were they just being young girls, not knowing the right thing to do, and not following what they were supposed to do, doing the right thing? So, that is the end of Act 1. The questions that I usually ask, and how I just quickly went through and talked about them. If you have any thoughts, questions, concerns, or additional comments that you want to add, or conflict or opposing viewpoints so far, feel free to let me know, and I will obviously discuss them, and we can figure out from there.